All right, I will go ahead and get started. I'm going to try to do this in about 15 minutes so that we've got plenty of time for questions and movement. But today I'm going to be talking about confidential computing's recent past, emerging present, and long-lasting future. I am Sal Kimmick. I am the technical community architect at the Confidential Computing Consortium, a sub-foundation of the Linux Foundation dedicated to this technology. So I want to start with the past, where we're going to talk about kernel to confidential compute, the present, the remote attestation agendas that we're dealing with right now, confidential containers and CVMs, and then realizing the promise of open security for sensitive compute, which is really the promise that confidential computing makes. So what is the history behind confidential computing? And I apologize for these slides being a little bit smaller in text, but there's an interesting history here. So the concepts behind privacy are very, very old. They are hundreds or thousands of years old, depending on what culture you are looking at. But when we look at the intersection of privacy and compute, the first time that we really see this conceptually realized is in 1978, which was this right up here, on databanks and privacy homomorphisms. Now, to be clear, this was the same year that Bee Gees' Fever Night was the top song of the year. So if you remember that song, that might bring you into a place of remembering that we did not have a lot of compute technology at this time. It's very conceptual. Now, in 2009, we got FHE, and that allowed us to really unlock confidential computing. In 2015, we got our first TEEs out of Intel. We then got the Confidential Computing Consortium that I'm representing today, and we have had many players come on board since then in the 2020s and beyond. But I'd like to step this back to a slightly broader part of history, because I think it's absolutely essential to understanding confidential computing, especially. Now, I would like to ask this question real quick. For everyone in the room, can you raise your hand quickly if this is your first time in this room, if this is your first time with confidential computing? Great. That's why I'm giving the first talk of the day and making it as, like, on the floor as possible. So, in 1961, we had the first ideas of a secure kernel, and this came from the Ferranti Atlas computer. In 1971, Intel releases its first chip. This is also the first time that we see a reference to the kernel generally in documentation, even though it is not often formally defined before this point. In 1975, AMD. We get a bit of a gap, 1985, ARM, 1995, NVIDIA. I think this is us really, really interesting to show that no matter at what stage these corporations get involved and invested in the production of compute, they are all converging on confidentiality and security at this time. And I believe that's probably why you are in this room. Now, confidential computing runs over a secure kernel. I used to work in a space where we were working on distributed surveillance algorithms, looking at the way that groups of people behave on the internet. And you can often use Linux kernels historically to be able to look at these algorithms and see what the value and the rate of information transfer was in a group of people, leading to the successful release of a kernel. The only kernel where it is not worth doing that analysis for is a secure kernel. Why? Because it's incredibly boring. Because there are no opinion statements put into the secure kernel. The secure kernel is based on a predicate calculus, so you are working only on mathematical proofs. These mathematical proofs observe an objects and subjects model. And if you're really curious about understanding the ways that confidential computing gets upstreamed into the secure kernel over which we operate, then we do have a kernel SIG. And I would really recommend maybe not joining on the live calls, but looking at the recordings and starting to get an idea of how people communicate in this space. But it gives you an absolute guarantee. It also was the first time in computational history where we have a uniquely not classified kernel. And this is the history that we're bringing with us into the future. There is no way, especially if we get into a post-quantum reality, there is no way of doing security by obscurity. You can only do security by an absolute transparency, such that if I leave the instruction set on the floor and an adversary picks it up, they still are not going to be able to get into the system. And again, that is the guarantee that we try to make with confidential compute. So for a long time, I have been trying to figure out how we secure systems with a human in the loop, either a malicious human in the loop or an adversarial actor. But increasingly, and the reason why I brought these three books for you to flip through today, is that I am now almost exclusively interested in understanding how we secure a system to prevent human, machine, but primarily workload identity, because that is the strongest threat vector that we seem to be seeing. And the three books that I brought that you should flip through today, because they're going to give you three very different perspectives on the present moment, and they're going to help you to understand it compositely. Cyber Deception, this book I love. This book teaches you how to do modern honeypots. This is the one from 2013. This one terrified me and is the reason why I decided to join the Sub Foundation. Because in this final chapter, instead of giving me the best advice that it usually gives me, it says, we have observed that we are seeing so many bot-on-bot adversarials that our traditional techniques of trying to bait a human being are absolutely irrelevant. Leading me then to read these two books. What are our strongest security approaches to this? This is Generative AI Security. It's a pretty good book, but the one that you really want to read if you are just getting started with confidential computing or with this idea of security, trust, boundaries, and isolation, I'd really recommend this one. This is from Mike Bursell, the executive director of confidential computing, so go talk to them if you want a shortcut on any of your questions for this. But this is a really, really good book to start with. I wouldn't consider it your, like, on-the-floor technical executing book. That you're going to get from kernel documentation, et cetera. But this is a very, very, very good epistemological deduction strategy of looking at how to understand systems. This is absolutely worth your time, especially if you're just getting started in security. I'd really recommend this as your base. Now, another one of the reasons why I'm really interested and invested in this is because of this paper that came out while I was at National Institutes of Health. We were unable to release a couple of large data sets in the Washington, D.C. area, which is where NIH is based, because there had been a breach of Netflix data, real, raw customer data, in a Netflix data set that was local to the D.C. area, and it was sufficient to have just that Netflix breach data and the data sets that we were trying to produce, which are scrubbed to the federal scientific standard of privacy. But if you interlay those with another data set, then you can use spark vector mathematics and you can absolutely identify an individual or a group of individuals. And look at those lower bounds. This is what adversarials do. This is what they calculate before they decide to try to break into a system to see if it's worth their time. And what that means to me is that confidential computing and privacy-enhancing technologies are only going to become more important. They are going to become more important because right now,